What's up, y'all? Welcome back. It's early April, and this is episode 10 of Lawns Across America. All right, y'all, so welcome back. I'm excited. It's early April. I've just come back from Northwest Indiana last week, and we put down our first pre-emergent application on the project lawn. I would say that we were right on the tip opening of the window for pre-emergent up there in Northwest Indiana, right outside of Chicago, Illinois, over by Lake Michigan, up over by there. You know where, over by Oaklawn, Illinois, over by there where Kanye West is from? Yeah, I know you guys get tired of that accent sometimes, but that's where I was in relation to the country. You can look at a map and understand where you're at on that same latitude and understand if maybe you're in some of that same zone where your window is open, but our window was just open. Maybe I was a few days early, but that illustrates that sometimes you have to make a judgment call because I wasn't going to be up in Northwest Indiana except for that weekend. So it made sense that we put it down and we went ahead and made a judgment call, and maybe we went 5 or 6 days early, but at least we got it down. So I'm really excited to be back and see now that a lot of you guys up north are really starting to wake up. And with that, I want to just throw out a quick, opening thought here, and it's going to center around the word patience. And I have to be careful because I think people think I'm preaching at them too much, and maybe sometimes I am because I don't talk about just preaching or teaching lawn care. I talk about preaching lawn care. Boy, I messed that one up, didn't I? But I want you to understand that we create this sense of urgency, and I think sometimes in my books I dial it in pretty hard, and maybe I write in such a way that gives you that sense of urgency, and I want you to have that, but I also don't want you to stress out about things, and I also don't want you to think that you're not doing something right or that you're not doing something wrong, or I don't want you to think that you're going to get overnight results. Now, you will get results as soon as temperatures come up wherever you're at, and I'm not just talking soil temperatures. I'm just talking the sun starts coming out and the days get longer and we start getting into the heat of late spring and early summer. Everybody's lawn's going to green up. Lawns on the side of the road green up at that time. So you're going to get that success. And that's where I need you to just have a little bit of patience now. A lot of the things that you're doing now are going to pay dividends later, much later, especially when we're talking about pre-emergence. And we're going to talk a lot about that today. That's going to come up in several different aspects, even talking about spot spraying certain areas with pre-emergence and all kinds of good things today. But I need you to just have some patience and just trust the process and follow the steps. And the first steps are that pre-emergent and get that watered in. Then get your fertilizer down. But the biggest thing is I really want you guys to start focusing on the mowing. Those of you down south, I'm talking about those of you with Bermuda grass, Zoysia grass, St. Augustine grass, Bahia grass, and centipede. You guys are all dealing with, right now, a lot of Poa annua, and that's what we call warm season turf in those areas. And you guys have a lot of Poa annua. Now, those of us with St. Augustine grass, we're far enough south. I don't think most of us will be dealing with Poa annua. But a lot of y'all through Georgia, Alabama, up into the Carolinas, even over into Mississippi and through a lot of Texas and Oklahoma, a lot of you guys are definitely seeing Poa annua right now, and it sucks that you have to just stare that in the face, but I promise you, better days are coming, especially if you're sitting on Zoysia or Bermuda grass, which most of you are because those are alpha grasses. And so when you start taking on that strategy of the more you mow, the healthier it will grow, the alpha nature of your grass type is going to help you take over. So have a little patience. I know you got to stare at that nasty, hairy, bitter crest right now. We're going to give you plenty of strategies come fall time to prevent those problems. But for right now, get out there, start the mowing. Hey, if you just mow down the hairy bitter crest, that's a good thing. But get out there and start that mowing and get into it. My friends up north, you guys are different. Cool season lawns, Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass, turf type tall fescue, say that three times fast. And of course, our fine fescues, like our creeping red fescue and our chewings fescue. Those are very interesting names that I like to say. You guys up north, your patience is that, and this is funny how this happens, and I noticed this when I was in Indiana. You have these days that are gray for a long time, and then you start getting a real nice blue sky day. Even when I was up in Indiana last week, we had a day that got over 60 degrees. I'm talking outside air temps now and blue skies. And that wakes you up, and like immediately, it only takes one of those days, and you humans, bam, you're ready to go, because you've been living in this gray sky cave for all these months. But now you get that one blue sky and you're out. But your lawn, it doesn't wake up quite that quick because it's dealing with the cool temperatures at night that are keeping it slow and just natural progression of the spring that's telling the lawn it's not quite time to start going too crazy yet. But you're seeing a few weeds coming in. You need to be patient as well, but you got plenty of work to do that's outside of turning it green, and that is, again, getting that raking out there, creating airflow, allowing sunlight to hit the soil to help speed things up. And that's what your patience is about right now, but make sure that you put down your pre-emergent for crabgrass too. Have that kind of patience, and your patience more comes if you see thinner areas. We're going to talk about this a lot today. is you want to overseed. You feel like you want to throw seed down because that's an active way. It's an offensive way to fill in thin spots. But I need you to have patience because you got to realize that crabgrass will be a much bigger issue for you later on if you don't prevent that now. So that's where your patience is in those thin spots and building that lawn over the long haul. The analogy that I have, I don't know if you guys know, there's a guy named Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K, Simon Sinek. I wouldn't call him a motivational speaker. That's not what he is. He's more of a philosopher, but he has this philosophy where he talks about the infinite game versus the short game. He has some different types of analogies that he'll make with that, but basically when he's talking about the infinite game versus the finite game. So the infinite game means that someone is playing to live, and the finite game means that someone is playing to win now. And I think a lot of times we're trained to be in the finite game, which the finite game means we're going to win this battle right now, all the time, win, win, win. And I think that's great. And with millennials, that's why I like working with millennials so much, because they're winners and they've been taught to win. But there are also times, though, especially with a lawn, you got to realize you're going to live in that house for 40, 50 years. Your grandkids are going to get married on that back lawn that you're mowing right now, you know, 20 years, 30 years earlier. Think about that. You are playing a long game. You're playing an infinite game. You're going to live with this lawn. You're playing for life. So you don't have to necessarily win every battle this second. It's better to go through it as a marathon, as a long ball play, to survive, to play to survive in the game rather than to win right now. Because listen, if you survive the long haul, you're going to get wins along the way. So you should look him up, Simon Sinek. I'm pretty sure that's a pretty good analogy there. I think if you watch the video, it's by a channel called Creative Mornings. Look up Simon Sinek, Understanding the Game We're Playing. And that's on, the name of the channel is Creative Mornings HQ. And again, the name of the video is Simon Sinek, Understanding the Game We're Playing. Pretty interesting, but I think it's a good way to look at things. And again, knowing that, yes, we're gonna try to win every battle, but it's okay to live with some challenges now, knowing we're going to stay in the game long term. And that's something that we're going to talk about today in a couple of these questions. All right, so we have our call-in line now, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But for now, I got a few that came in via email this week. And I want to go ahead and cover these real quick because these are some really good ones. And I think they're ones that'll kind of hit a lot of you guys because they're all around the country, but there's some similar problems that we face no matter where you live. So this first one comes out of Elk River, Minnesota. And this comes from Chad. He says, I purchased a new construction home last year here in Elk River, Minnesota. Shortly after, I found your YouTube channel as I prepped for the new sod that was coming. Following your guides and videos, cared for my new sod over the summer. Then did an aeration and overseed in the fall. Some of the sod was not as thick as I would have liked after being put down in the summer. I also did Milorganite every 4 to 6 weeks after the first four that the sod was laid, and a winterizer app in November. Okay, so basically he got sod in, he got it established, and he just started up the program. That's what he did. But he was saying that some of the sod areas towards the fall weren't as thick as he may have liked, and he also did an aeration and overseed. Now as the snow melts, now he's coming into this year. Now as the snow melts, we have pretty major vole damage across the whole neighborhood. I have pretty large bare spots that have been left as I rake the damaged clear areas. I have also noticed that the sod from last year has a pretty dense thatch, especially noticeable in the bare areas from the voles. Some of the vole damage areas are still under snow or frozen to the ground, so I was thinking maybe it would be a good idea to dethatch and clean up both the vole damage and the thatch layer all in one group, or maybe just clean up the vole damage and aerate again. No overseed, just punch holes. Good idea, a bad idea, or have a better idea? So the first thing I want to talk about here is, and this is, people use the word thatch a little bit differently, whoever you talk to. Some people right now will call their entire lawn that's dormant, they'll call the whole thing thatch, and that is not the case. A lot of that is going to green right back up once, you know, the dead ends of it get cut off, or some of it will completely green up. It's just the nature of grass. That is not thatch. So right now, when you're coming out of winter, it can be tough to tell the difference in just dormant grass and thatch. So I just want to make that clear. The thatch may not be as bad as you think. Now, with the vole damage, definitely get out there and rake lightly. You'll be able to tell what is actual, you know, piled up junk from the voles, which are field mice. We've talked about this earlier on a podcast. You'll be able to tell what their nesting and bedding area is and the stuff that they've ripped up. You'll be able to tell that different from raking the grass that still holds on or still sticks. So definitely get a good majority of that vole garbage out of there. Get that stuff out of there and then see what's left. for the most part, if you still have turf throughout, a lot of that's going to come back. A lot of that, especially once you get that raked out and the sun hits it, the roots, you know, a lot of the crowns are not dead and the roots will start pushing up, you know, some fresh grass blades there, and a lot of that will start to come up. Now, we are going to talk a little bit later about areas that are really, really bad that you need to seed in the spring. But for right now, I would just say I wouldn't get too crazy. This is where the patience comes in, worrying about dethatching right now, especially if you have brand new sod that was just installed last year. I really don't think that you could have that bad of a thatch layer built up yet, unless in the summer the watering got away from you, but I don't think it did. It looks like you're really on top of it. So I would definitely say no. Let's go ahead and just stick with the basic best practices. Don't aerate. Don't open anything up. Just have a little, you know, stick to the process there. Get your pre-emergent down once your snow's gone, once your soil temps are leading up to 55 there. Get that pre-emergent down. Get that fertilizer down. Start your frequent mowing and stick to the process that way. And by the way, Chad, I did want to say congratulations on your home purchase. Again, you guys know that is one of the most favorite things that I love hearing about is when y'all buy new homes and one of the first things you do is get out there and start working on the lawns. So with that, let's head down south now to our next question, which is coming out of South Carolina. This is Daniel. Daniel says, I moved into a new house last spring, and this spring, by the way, congratulations, another new house. I moved into a new house last spring. In this spring, I'm turning my attention to the neglected lawn, tall fescue mostly. Given that I have some areas of which seems to be very compacted clay soil, I plan to do both spring and fall aerations to try to loosen the soil as best I can to prepare for fall overseeding. I know typically cool season grasses are aerated in the fall, so should I be doing the spring aeration at all? I know aerating may interfere with the pre-emergent that I've already put down, but to be honest, I was too late with the pre-emergent, so I'm not sure it's going to do me much good anyway. What else should I be concerned with? So the first thing I want to talk about here, and this one comes up quite often, so Dan, you're not the only one to think this is, guys, but clay soil is not bad soil. Listen, when I lived in Indiana, we had just terrible gray, just what I would call dead clay soil, just this gray, everything's gray. I love Northwest Indiana, I know it, but the clay soil was great, and some of the most beautiful cornfields would grow in that. Some of the most beautiful lawns would grow on what were former cornfields full of clay. So clay soil is not bad. That's the first thing, so you don't have to worry about having bad soil. The next thing is your pre-emergent being late is better than your pre-emergent not being at all. You're still plenty early, even in South Carolina. You might have missed the optimum perfect window for your first application of pre-emergent, but I will tell you, Dan, you are still in a good window. So your pre-emergent that you put down, even though it may have been late, is helping you, and it's good, and we want to prevent crabgrass, because even though you think your soil is bad, you know what will grow in that ugly, nasty clay soil is crabgrass. By the way, your good grass will too, and that's why I talk about using products like organic fertilizers that are going to add carbon to the soil. I also recommend, obviously, that you get out there and use our aerate product because it's going to dive down into the soil and give you a liquid aeration, and it will not interfere with pre-emergent because it dives down deep and the pre-emergent sits right at the top, whereas mechanical aeration will because it's literally a machine going through the vapor barrier and sweeping through it, whereas the aerate goes through and goes down into the soil and doesn't affect it but still causes what you want, which is to give you aeration in your soil. It'll create space in your soil, and then the humic acid comes in and bumps it all out. So I definitely recommend that you amend your soil that way with organic fertilizers and with other products like that, humic acid and things, and take that soil to another level. By the way, your grass roots are growing in that soil right now. So the more that you can do to strengthen the soil, the more grass roots you get, then that means the more organic material will be in there naturally, and that's going to also improve your soil. So just think about that. Grass grows on the side of the highways. I've seen grass growing up through cracks in highways. Grass can grow pretty much everywhere, and those highways are way harder and way, you know, more concrete than your clay soil is. Unless you're Connor Ward, he definitely has clay soil, according to everybody on the internet. So I know I kind of sometimes go off in these little rants like that, but I just want you to understand that you've got good soil there. You got to love that soil. There's good microbes already in that soil, and you need to feed those microbes, get those bad boys kicked up, get that lawn healthy, get that synergy going in that soil, and you will be all good. So no aeration, none of that stuff. Just stick to the process. Let your grass run. Start trying to do the every 3-day mowing. I really recommend you do that. That's really going to be the best thing, especially with that fescue. You're going to want it because it's not going to spread by rhizome, but it'll get fat. The more you mow that fescue, the fatter it will get and the thicker and the denser it will get. And that's what you want to do. That's what you want to try to encourage there. Okay, now we're going right on back up. We're going to the heart of the Midwest over by Illinois. Let's see what Sean has to say. I'm in central Illinois and was putting together this wonderful plan to dethatch, aerate, compost, pre-emergent, and starter fertilizer this weekend. Sounds like a party, bro. I was preparing my lawn this evening by raking up leaves that didn't get raked last fall due to our tight schedule moving into the house. Congratulations on your new house, Sean. I realized how bare the yard really was, especially in one fairly large section. On top of this, I'm not sure I can get the compost here by Friday or Saturday to throw down on top of the aerated lawn. So here's where Sean really dials it in. I was really looking at the long goal, but I'm not sure if it's worth it without the compost, especially with the shape of the lawn. At this point, I'm second-guessing the entire plan and wondering if I should just aerate, overseed, and fertilize this weekend rather than using the compost and prodiamine. What are your thoughts on which direction I should take? Okay, so let's talk about this one because this is something that a lot of you guys are coming into. So Sean's been out actually in the lawn raking, and he is literally finding large bare patches. So we'll talk about the large bare patches kind of separately here because he mentions that's one spot in the yard. But overall, this is a used lawn or an old school lawn. I want to ask this question, Sean. Do you have at least 30% good turf grass there or 30% turf grass? Now, it's all going to be brown right now, but you can still tell what your turf grass is and what the lawn is consistently made up of. And is it 30% dirt? Or, I mean, 30%, is it 30% turf and 70% dirt? Or is it 30% turf and maybe 30% other things? And I mean, whatever it is, if it's at least 30% turf and it's in where you're at here in Illinois, so that's cool season turf, which is going to be a lot of Kentucky bluegrass and fescue there and probably some rye, I would say that you don't need to do any of that in the spring, that you need to stick with the process, which is get your pre-emergent down, get your first fertilizer app down, and get ready to start mowing every 3 days or mow every Wednesday and every Saturday. That's what I would tell you to do because if you go look on our YouTube channel at the original Church Lawn Project, you will see that's a 30% turf lawn and it was green within a month. I'm telling you guys, there's like this miracle that you're going to see happen. And it is, it feels like a miracle where right around Kentucky Derby Day, first Saturday in May, boom, the lawn will be green. Now, if you haven't done anything or you're not prepared to get on the weeds, you're also going to have a very big explosion of dandelions about that same time. But sometime before those dandelions explode, just before your grass will just be this miraculous green out of nowhere. You'll be like, oh my gosh, right? And that's what I want to ask Sean here is, Sean, I love this strategy. This is a lot of stuff here. But first of all, aeration in the spring, I mean, we can go back and forth on it, but I just think that poking all those holes in the spring is just, in our previous example, I didn't want him to aerate because he had already put his pre-emergent down. You haven't put a pre-emergent down yet, so it's still open to you, but I still think you're opening things up. You're just grabbing stuff from under the ground and bringing it up, and I don't want you to bring crabgrass seeds up and open more sunlight and more water up to crabgrass seeds, right? We want to push top growth anyway in the springtime because top growth is going to absorb more sunlight as the sun is starting to come up. So that way we can get more, you know, photosynthesis to occur that can be sent down into the roots. So we really want that top growth in the spring. And so I would encourage you not to aerate. I would encourage you to stick to the process of, again, the prodiamine and then get some fertilizer down. That's typically what I would tell you to do. The compost and all that, I mean, man, that's like some more advanced type strategies if you want to start getting organic material into the soil and all that. But I still believe you can do that with just using good doses of organic fertilizers every 4 to 5 weeks. Just maximize them, bring them around, use some Ringer, use some Lorgonite, use some Menards brand, whatever we found over there. What's another one? Simple Lawn or Simple Grow Solutions. I don't know. Somebody, Ben the Lawn Guardian, was telling me about somebody that's got like a Ringer clone out now. Just find those things. I don't care what you get. You know, whenever we get Carbon X here, which will hopefully be in the next like 2 weeks, I'm pretty sure, 2 weeks, hopefully, that's going to add carbon to your soil because it's got biochar in it. So start, you know, eating from the smorgasbord of cool stuff that builds your soil that way. Also while fertilizing and again, doing that mowing. I really think that's the most important thing. So I would say, being as you're kind of new here and things are coming along for you for the first time, is I would work that old school lawn where it is. And then in the fall time, if you need to clean anything up with some aeration overseed, that's when you can do that. Now, let's go back to the bare spot. I do realize that there are times when you're going to have an area that's so, there's not 30% turf there and it's bare. And so what I would tell you to do there is you obviously don't put your pre-emergent there. If you can at that point, then go to a liquid, but it's not hard to leave out an area with your spreader of dry product, prodiamine. It's not that hard to avoid a big bare spot that you have while you're spreading your prodiamine. So that's the first thing. But use that technique. I just like Scott's Patchmaster. It's got seed already in it. There's other products that are like that, that are this recycled paper stuff. I just think that works the best. Just don't get it too thick. But go out there, throw your seed down on the bare spot, put that Scott's Patchmaster over top or whatever other stuff you have, and water, 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 water. Take advantage of the spring rains that you have and go ahead and grow some grass in those areas. Sure, you might have to fight some crabgrass later on, but I'll fight it in a 10 by 10 area rather than opposed to an entire 8,000 square foot lawn, right? So if you have those areas that you have to seed, then by all means do it. And I recommend using that Patchmaster type of a strategy. It's just easy, bing, bam, boom, it's done, and it'll stick. That's the whole thing, is you're going to get a lot of hard spring rains and you need something to help that grass to stick in there, or help that seed to stick in there. So there's my advice to you, Sean. Just stick it out. I think you got a lot of good things in that lawn. It's just a little too early to see how awesome they are. But definitely, if you have some areas that need to be seeded, just make sure when you do those little spots of seed that there isn't too much of a chance for frost. You don't want to be too soon in your area there, but I think you're coming pretty close. Sometime around May is when your chance for frost is going to go away. So you're getting right into that window here sometime in mid-April. Go ahead and seed that one bare spot there and hope for the best. Now we're gonna go right up to Massachusetts. This is Joe, and Joe's got a multiple question here, so we're gonna go through this. I think this podcast is gonna be pretty long, but some of you guys tend to appreciate that. Some of you have sent me emails telling me just to get to the dang point, Alan. All right, so here we go. Joe from Massachusetts, he says, I am in my second season of lawn care, and I'm looking to incorporate your program this year. I've purchased Milorganite and Prodiamine, and I'm watching soil temperatures closely. I will finish up raking the entire yard by the end of this week, and I had it aerated last fall. All right, we're on a good start. So here he goes. I got a few questions. Number one, should I aerate again in the spring? I've had several real compacted soil areas in the past, and I want to make sure there are enough holes punched in there right now to kick off the growing season. Would a second round of aeration be too much? It is a newer development built in 2016. I'm leaning towards round number two just to make sure. And I'm going to tell you, same as I said before, since you have not applied pre-emergent yet, I'm going to tell you no. Do not aerate. We don't want to open up too much what's under there. The other thing you're going to find is that in the spring, your lawn is going to be pretty soft. A lot of people ask me about leveling the lawn. Listen, guys, I don't have a solution to leveling lawns. I wish I did. People ask about lawn rollers. I've never used one. I don't know if they work or not. Leveling a lawn, it's like there's no good answer for it except to rip things up with a Bobcat. So he's not asking about leveling the lawn, but what I will tell you is your lawn is much softer in the spring. You can just feel it. Just get out there right now. You can feel the lawn is much more squishy under your feet. So if you're going to roll it, or you're going to try to roll it, go ahead. But with that, what I'm talking about with Joe here is your lawn, Joe, probably doesn't need to be aerated. It's probably already soft enough just from all the water and melted snow and all the rain and everything that's in there. Your lawn is already pretty soft. And trust me, the grass isn't going to need any more help in that regard. But what it is going to need help with is that pre-emergent. We do not want to get crabgrass in there because that will be a direct competition with your grass. Secondly, can I mix Milorganite and Prodiamine, throw them down together, or should I do them separately? So the question there, or the answer there, is definitely do not mix those two products in the hopper together and put them out. You can't do that because your math will be off. And everything we do is about pounds on the ground. The Prodiamine goes down at 3 pounds per thousand, and the Milo goes down at 12 pounds per thousand in the beginning. And there's no way to mix that in the hopper and get that right. You never, ever mix products together in a hopper. Now, you'll see professionals doing it with fertilizer products. That's because that's fertilizer only and they know what they're doing. But in this case, no. And I'm just going to tell you, for most homeowners, 99% of homeowners, don't mix stuff together in the hopper. Just walk the lawn twice. You could use the exercise. It'll be good for you. But you can put them down on the same day. No problem there. Water it all in together. The Milo doesn't care if you water it or not. But the Prodiamine definitely needs to be watered in. All right, next question. Like you said on the podcast, many of us understand the process but run things through you to verify. My plan is to put down Prodiamine and Milorganite on April 6th when temperatures are 46. Grass seed when soil is at 60, and then another application of Prodiamine when the soil is at 70. Does that make sense? I know timing is everything. So yes, timing is everything, but there's one thing in there, Joe, that is just, I just want to correct you on, and that is the grass seed. The Prodiamine is a pre-emergent application, and what it does is it stops seeds in the soil from germinating. And it does that by creating a vapor barrier right at the soil line. And when those seeds germinate, when they're very, very young, grass plants grow, or living things grow, through cell division. Cells divide. That's how things grow. And that product interrupts that cell division and it kills the very young plant. That's how it works. It will do the same thing, though, with your good grass seed that you throw down. It will affect it in the very same way. And as soon as it's about to germinate, or as soon as it does germinate, the cell division will be interrupted by the prodiamine, and your grass seed, therefore, will not grow. So no grass seed in the spring, my friend, but everything else you had there is good. Prodiamine and milorganite, and then about 40 days later or so, when soil temperatures come up to 70, you can put your second application of prodiamine down. And sometime right around there, you can also throw another app of milorganite down, and you'll be good to go. His third question is, do you recommend using any kind of top dressing or additional soil? My front lawn has a tendency to puddle in certain areas. Again, it was aerated last fall, but I'm not sure if this is enough. I don't want these granules of product to wash away. So I do not recommend bringing any foreign soil into your lawn ever. You just don't know what's in it. You don't know what you're bringing in. You think you're bringing in good things, but I don't know how that was treated, taken care of, or anything like that. And if you're bringing in some kind of crazy weed that you're that you don't have or you can't get rid of or there's no pre-emergent for, that's not worth the risk. So no, I don't recommend you do that at all. If you do need to level areas, sand is a great leveling agent. And no, sand will not turn your lawn into concrete. But again, we talk about the leveling a little bit. I'm not going to address it directly, but if you do have some areas that are a little bit low, you can bring some sand in to try to level them off. However, my biggest thing is if you have areas that are puddling or the water is standing after a rainstorm, you may want to think about some drainage. You may want to think about taking some downspouts and moving them to direct in another area. Start looking at things like that. You know, a lot of rain, when it rains, a lot of water comes off your roof and it's being directed through just a few downspouts. That's a lot of water going into one spot. Maybe it's just too much for that area. You redirect the downspouts. Maybe you put in some surface drains to help take water away. Maybe you don't have gutters at all and you need to install gutters. But I would look at things like that to try to mitigate the water first, and then obviously realize that maybe you do have a small low spot there, and if you do, use some sand, rake that in. Go to Connor Ward's video where he does the sand raking. It's a lot of fun, and you can also tell him his lawn is full of concrete. He would love to hear that. So great questions overall, Joe. Hope that helped you up there in Massachusetts. Okay, now we're going to go now just over to Connecticut, and we're going to have a question here that's got a few different things in it, but it's going to also address moss, and we're going to talk about this in a very similar way. John in West Hartford, Connecticut. I discovered your YouTube channel last year, bought my prodiamine this year, and excited for two lawn projects front and back. Thank you for all you do. I tell my friends to follow you. Thanks, bro. I had a question about the backyard, which has a lot of shade and wet spots with moss. The moss was really visible a few weeks ago as we had some wet, warm days. I recently put down some moss out and raked up the patches. In some parts, the moss came up in rolls of carpet, taking the grass with it. This left some big bare patches in the turf. Most are 1 by 1 foot, but some closer to 2 by 3 foot at the big end. I was going to do split apps of prodiamine in the front and in the back, and I have these large patches of bare dirt where the moss was. I know you don't love seeding in the spring, but does it make sense to seed in the backyard where I remove the moss? My logic is, if the moss was this thick, there probably isn't any crabgrass seed underneath, so new grass might survive. I'll spot spray any dandelions in the back, but I like to leave the clover in back. That's cool. I also removed several trees and bushes shading the back, so I've increased the sunlight for the formerly mossy parts. The other option is that I follow the cool season plan and hope the patches fill in over the spring, summer. This is a great question. So the first thing is, I love the way that John talks. He's like, my logic tells me this. That's exactly right. And you know what, John? Your logic is right. An area that was covered with moss that you had to peel up like carpet that was formerly shaded and wet all the time is not going to have crabgrass seeds in there. It's doubtful that it will. So good call there, and you're fine there, and you're ready to spot spray later on if needed. I like that you're leaving the clover in there. That's super cool, man, for the bees. All good, all along the lines. The other thing that you did that I liked is that you opened up sunlight and you've allowed some of those areas to hopefully dry out, because the biggest thing is, and we can talk about the chemical moss out you use. I've never had to use that. It's not something I've ever messed with. But the fact that you used it and it worked is fine. Sounds like you got the problem cleared up. That's what we really want. But the thing you got to think about, and this is where Ben the Lawn Guardian and I were talking too, because he's dealing with this at his house. If you go to the Lawn Guardian channel on YouTube, you will see his backyard. He's got some moss areas too, is let's figure out what else we can do to make sure that area doesn't stay wet. Because typically, moss is a symptom of constant wetness, and constantly wet soil becomes hydrophobic. I think it's hydrophobic, anaerobic, some sort of obic. That's what happens when I try to act like I'm John Perry. But what it does is it won't grow anything in it because it's underwater, literally. And so things have to aspirate or breathe differently in that soil. So crazy, right? Somebody will correct that in the YouTube comments. But the long and the short of that is you want to make sure you dry that up. So that goes back to you did open up the sunlight to come in, but I would still look, just like we talked about before, I would see, do I have gutters on that side of my house or do I need to install gutters to make sure that rainwater doesn't come over there? You know, even like here, it gets so humid sometimes that water drips through off the house just from humidity. And, you know, that kind of stuff can build up. Maybe you have an air conditioning unit there that's sweating and bringing water in. I notice I see some stuff like that in certain areas. Whatever you can do to redirect water away, clean things up, if you need to put in some French drains, some surface drains, go check out old Chuck with Apple Drains on YouTube, one of my favorite guys on YouTube because he's just always so positive and encouraging. YouTube, it's called Apple Drains. He doesn't sponsor anything. I just like him. He's just a good dude. So either way, I think that's really what you want to do. You've already gone through some of the right steps here. And with that area, definitely go ahead and just take that same strategy that I talked about earlier and get that seed in there. Now that you are pretty sure that that's going to be dried up, and that's the first thing, like I said, we don't want to create the problem back. So take some of those precautions to make sure it stays dry, monitor it, but go ahead and use that Scott's Patchmaster in there. Get those areas growing in now in the spring, and then you're ready to go. You're ready to spot spray when you need to. And then, of course, any areas where the moss wasn't, you would treat those just like you normally would, as what the Cool Season Plan talks about. Just get the pre-emergent in there, keep your fertilizing in, keeping things going. So you'll kind of have two spots in the lawn that you're dealing with, the area that you just freshly seeded versus the area of your lawn that's still going. You'll have to manage those two together, but I think you'll be all good. Sounds like your strategy and your logic and your gut is telling you the right thing to do. So great job, John. Really look forward to hearing about your results this year. All right, now we're going to go to our recordings, and this thing is getting really long here, but this one's going to go down to my friends here in Florida. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned take all root rot is something that a lot of folks are finding here in St. Augustine grass. I'm going to try to tackle this one. I'm not a super professional on it, but I've consulted with some folks and done some studying, and I'm going to go ahead and give you some of the best advice that I can. And a lot of this is going to be hoping for the best, because take all root rot is not something that's easy to control. So with that, let's go to our first recording here of the week.
Hi, Alan. My name's Robert. I live down in Naples, Florida, just a little bit south of you. Thanks a lot for all of your great content. It's been extremely helpful. I'm in a new house, or relatively new, and I've just started taking more care of my lawn. I have a massive widespread problem of take all, which I've identified thanks to your last podcast. It's so widespread that I'm not really sure I can put I can get as much peat moss as I need. I've already put down 11 bales, and there's still a lot of area to cover. So I'm wondering, do I need to get really serious about covering every single spot, or, you know, is take all something that maybe kind of naturally improves as we go into the summer and will kind of wane a little bit on its own? Also, you mentioned possibly spreading the disease by mowing, and that we should catch our clippings. Unfortunately, my mower, I don't even think there's a bag I can get for it. So I'm wondering, should I be really concerned about spreading it when I mow? And are there any other ways that I can prevent that spread, considering I don't think I can get a bag for my mower? And then finally, since the problem is so widespread, I'm kind of nervous about using some products now on it. You know, you mentioned the peat moss has a low pH in it and the take all doesn't do well in a more acidic environment. And I'm wondering, because, you know, I got the next biased impact, and one of the things in there, I think a couple of them have pretty high pHs, and I was wondering if that might be kind of counterproductive to the peat moss. And finally, since the take all root rot's been going on for a while and I haven't known about it, I've had some Bermuda that's just come in and completely dominated my front yard. If you have an extra second, I'd love some tips on how I might be able to deal with that without killing the whole lawn. And with that, that's pretty much all I got. Thank you so much.
Okay, Robert, we got a lot to unpack here, so let's go through it. So let's just talk about a couple things first. The first one is, yes, this is a long-lasting, or this is a damaging turf disease, especially if it's as bad as you're saying, where the entire lawn is covered with it, and you've already put out 3 bales of peat moss and still not covered the whole lawn. You have a very large lawn. So yes, this will cause long-lasting damage. The other thing is, if you can't bag the clippings, well, you know, then that's fine. That's you don't have that choice. But definitely make sure that you're mowing tall when you do, and never remove more than 1/3 of the grass blade's length. We want to leave as much grass blade length on these blades as we can, even though they're yellow. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So those are just a couple quick things. You are going to need to go ahead and try to do something here. It's a tough one, but I'm going to try to give you some of the very best advice that I can from just what I've learned and from the studies and some of the studies that I've done and from talking to a couple folks. So the first one is that for fertilizing, we're not going to want to push a ton of quick-release nitrogen, But what we do want to do is we want to go to liquid feedings. Because this is a root problem, the grass isn't going to be able to take nutrients in as well from the roots because the roots are what are damaged, but we can get some foliar intake. So with your BioStim package you have microgreen in there. So you're going to want to microdose in using a nice fine mist from a backpack sprayer, a 6 ounce per gallon thousand or 6 ounces per thousand rate of microgreen every couple weeks. You just want to get a nice fine mist on those yellow blades. Now, most of the foliar uptake happens within minutes, so you can go ahead and water the lawn, you know, within an hour or so, because all that foliar uptake is going to happen quickly in the very beginning. But that will help you get some micros in through that liquid feed, and that will help to strengthen the grass as best it can. The same thing you can do if you can get some liquid slow release potassium. You're going to want to get that in there every couple weeks at nice spoon-fed doses, just nice little easy amounts fed in there. Nitrogen is okay as long as it does not exceed the potassium. So if you're going to put down a quarter pound of potassium, then you can put down a quarter pound of nitrogen. And you'll want to do that also through a liquid means. Now, I would recommend that you just do the entire lawn from now going forward with something that is going to be more balanced that way. So you want to switch to like a Ringer Lawn Restore, which is a 1006. I bet you could probably find something locally, but get something organic that's going to be closer in nitrogen and potash content and use that for the entire lawn going forward. That'll be probably a granular, but I'm just saying use that. So those are some of the things I would recommend doing that way, is to try to get some foliar feed going into the lawn as you have it. The second thing I would say is a fungicide is okay. Obviously, preventative is better, which we'll talk about, but it is okay to apply a fungicide to help slow things down. Probably Eagle, which is Myclobutanil Eagle fungicide. I think that's probably going to give you the best result from the research that I've done. Propiconazole will be fine too. Azoxystrobin is good, but I've only seen that available affordably in granular type applications, and I really want the liquid here because I want that in the foliage and I want this to get up there in the top and get in. So you can probably use Eagle would be your best bet that way, and you can apply that according to the label for sure. The peat only has to, peat moss that you're doing, this is the third piece, only has to be a quarter inch thick. We're only caring about it changing the pH right at the tip top of the soil. What you're doing now is not going to change the overall pH of your lawn. That's not the goal here. To change the pH of an overall lawn, especially at like 2 or 3 inches down, 4 inches down, that takes a lot to move that. So we're not using the peat moss for that. We're just using it right there at the edge, right there at the top where the disease is affecting the roots. That's what we're using it for. So that is very important, just a quarter inch thick is all you need there. Now, definitely coming up next spring, you're going to want to do a preventative application, and you're going to want to look up my bulletproof strategy, and you want to get that down before this point. But one other thing that you can do, and that I would recommend you do, is right now, you're going to have to do something, right? So I would recommend maybe trying to plug some of the worst spots. Go get some grass plugs. You can get them at Home Depot, whatever St. Augustine you have. I don't know if you have Floratam or if you have Palmetto. I would look. Palmetto might be more resistant. You might want to look it up. I don't know that for sure. But you might want to look up and do some research on what St. Augustine type cultivars are showing better disease resistance and get some plugs of that particular cultivar and start plugging that in. It'll blend fine, especially if a good majority of the current lawn is dying off. That may be something to do. Now, some people would say, Alan, even if you do put those brand new plugs in there, they're just going to get infested. Well, they are, but I kind of think of this like as almost skin grafting. You have to do something, right? You can't just sit there and let it go. So put those plugs in there. They're healthy. Hopefully with all this other stuff you're doing with the peat moss in there, you're going to be doing some foliar feeds that your plugs will also get. Hopefully some things will change as the season does progress, because that's one of the other things he asked. Does it slow down? Well, yeah, once we get into the heat of the summer, the disease itself will slow down, but it doesn't mean that the grass that was there will be able to recover. So if you've got plugs in there that you've started plugging in, you know, think of it just like, I don't know, skin grafting or surgery or adding, I don't know. I don't know what the good analogy is, but there's a medical analogy here of getting something new and fresh in there, even though it might go downhill. Maybe it's like adding blood, like a blood transfusion. Think of it that way. I don't know. I'm getting too crazy here, but I would also try putting some plugs in there because I just feel like I want to do something active, and those plugs are going to come in with a fresh soil base. They can start taking off and hopefully start to root in and be strong. Now, the other question he asked was about the biostimulants. By the way, you could also put some aerate down You don't want to go crazy with that, but you could definitely put that down just to help open up some things in the soil and stimulate microbes down in the soil. I think that would be a good thing because that's got the humic acid in it. Anytime you can stimulate microbes in a soil, that's going to be good for the overall health of the soil itself, which would be good for whatever grass is still existing there. But the pH of those products will not change anything that way. The pH, I get that question a lot, will the pH of the products change the pH of the soil? No, because if it would, we'd be selling them that way for sure. But no, it's such small amounts that you're adding that it's not gonna change the overall pH of the soil at all, even over years, because again, very, very small amounts that we're adding. These are very low use products, the next products are. And that's what he's talking about. So the last question is, and we're unpacking a lot here, my friend, but the last question is about the Bermuda that's invading. So he got, not only does he have this disease hitting, he's also got Bermuda opportunistically, Bermuda coming in like this opportunistic alpha male, just taking over in this lawn that's being ravaged by this disease. And I'm sorry that I don't have any good answer for you there at all. The only answer I have with Bermuda invading St. Augustine is what I call chop and drop. And this would be if you had a diseased lawn or not, is you basically go in with a weed whacker and you chop the Bermuda areas down as low, scalp them to the dirt, and then drop sod on top and literally blot out the sun and hope for the best. The Bermuda will come back. Sometimes it'll come back in the same year. Sometimes it might take it a couple years to take hold. It just depends how big of an area that you chop and drop on. But I can tell you that even if you were to kill the whole thing with glyphosate and go in with a sod cutter and all, the Bermuda will still come back. So it's easier to just chop and drop. And so any areas where that Bermuda's invading, consider chop and drop. This sounds to me like a really rough problem, and I really wish you the best with it. And basically, definitely send me some pictures. I'd like to see how things come out. I hope that was some kind of good advice for you. And again, not something I've necessarily dealt with too much, but it is something that a lot of people do. So with that next one, let's go out to Richmond, Virginia. A little bit easier question this time. And here we go.
Hey, Alan, this is Eric in Richmond, Virginia, RVA Lawn Love. And my yard is a mix of tall fescue and Kentucky bluegrass. And my question is, how many mows do you need to get in before you start striping? Thank you, sir.
All right, Eric, thank you, first of all, for the easier question. There's Eric right there, RVA Lawn Love. Got his sticker right there on the LCN laptop. So here's what I would say about lawn striping. I know everybody wants to do it. This is cool season lawns mostly, although I have proven that you can stripe St. Augustine grass. But for cool season lawns, I would wait until the sun is going to be high in the sky daily in blue skies. In other words, you want to make sure that when you're striping, it's those brightest sunny days. Number one, because your stripes won't show up on overcast days anyway. And number two is the sun makes the grass stand up and it makes it vigorous and it makes it malleable and pliable and it won't mat down and your airflow will be fine. Because when you're striping and it's super sunny days, the grass does stand back up, but it does that over a few days as it kind of moves towards the sun. But if you do that on days that are overcast for days on end, it won't stand back up, and that can invite disease. It can, because again, it's all about that airflow. So I would say go ahead and start striping whenever you're going to have a majority of blue and sunny days, Eric. And for you, my friend, that can't be too long off. Let's go to our next question, and this one is in Waco, Texas.
Hi, Alan. My name is Andy, and I'm in Waco, Texas. I've got a lawn that is supposed to be Bermuda grass, but is unfortunately mostly weeds. My question is there a point to where it's not worth it to just try to bring the lawn back? I know that we've talked about nuking it and starting over not always being the best practice, but is there a point where the lawn is so bad that just trying standard best practices is no longer the best practices? Thanks so much.
So, Andy, this is a great question, and this is a little different than when we talked about it with cool season lawns earlier. You have Bermuda grass, so I'm going to tell you right now, Andy, even 20% turf throughout. Now, if you have bare spots, that's different, but 20% turf throughout, Bermuda will come back. You should see what Matt Martin's done on his lawn. If you go to his channel, The Grass Factor, he's actually doing a lot of cool stuff with his Bermuda in the back, converted it from fescue. But you want to take advantage of the alpha male grass that you have, and Bermuda will spread like an alpha male the more you mow it. Now, you're going to want to knock the weeds out. If you have winter annuals, you know, we've already kind of talked about this, but you're going to want to keep the weeds out. You're going to want to keep your pre-emergent down to keep other competition out and let that grass run. Now, if you have super bare spots, then what I recommend with Bermuda is you either sod those spots or plug plug those spots. You can find Bermuda plugs. We have them on our website, thelawncarenut.com, but you can get plugs. Those are ways that you can thicken up Bermuda, because that does not stop you from pushing the rest. If you plug the lawn or sod certain areas, but especially plugs, it doesn't stop you from treating the lawn. The plugs just get the same treatment as everything else, and they just keep running along. It's just they're coming in as a little stronger than what's there. So 20% on the Bermuda if it's 20% turf. And I'm going to tell you, here's the biggest piece of advice I can give you guys on this, is to don't always look at your lawn from eye level. We as humans, we always want to look at it from eye level. Get down in the grass. Get inches away from the ground and look at the grass from that angle down low. You will notice more grass than you think you have. You will also notice more things about the weeds that you have, and you'll understand a little bit more about that ecosystem when you get down in it and look at it from that view. So I would say get down in there and really look for that 20% and get ready to let that alpha male grass run. All right, now our last one of the day comes from Michelle in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Hi, I'm Michelle from Lincoln, Nebraska. I have tall fescue in my yard, and I should be putting down pre-emergent probably the first week of April, but I'm getting underground sprinklers the second or third week of April. So my question is, should I still put down the pre-emergent before, or should I, you know, wait till after, or maybe do like a split application for the first 3 pounds per 1,000 square feet? So thanks.
Michelle, awesome question. So look, questions like this tell me that the message that I'm sending out there is working. And the message is that I want you to think through the strategy. I want you to work it out in your head, because Michelle's already worked it out in her head. She just wants a little bit of a validation. I can tell. She already knows the right thing to do here. She's looking at the options. She's weighing them out. And that is exactly what you do, because that's how you take charge of your lawn care. So Michelle, first of all, thank you for your question. This is a super smart question. So here's the deal. She knows that her typical first application, if she wasn't getting in-ground sprinklers, would be the very beginning of April, like today, I think she said in her date. And she sent this question in a little while ago, so I'm sorry if I'm late here for you, Michelle. But she knows that today would be her perfect date. But she's getting sprinklers installed 2 weeks from now, and then it'll probably be another week after that. You know, you got to get stuff cleaned up. So she probably wouldn't actually be able to get her first pre-emergent app down. If she waited, she wouldn't be able to get that down till May. So she's asking, I got sprinklers coming, and what she knows is, and what she's getting at here is that when you have sprinkler system installed, you have tons of foot traffic on your lawn, machinery, people digging, all kinds of things. So your thinking is dead on, Michelle. You do not want to apply that pre-emergent application now on April 4th, because it will be just trampled and destroyed and ripped up from the sprinkler install. And you won't have a lot left over after that, because you have a yearly maximum. So I don't want to get too confusing here. So you're exactly right. You should wait. It's okay to take the chance and wait. You're going to have a lot of stuff get tore up in that lawn anyway, which may cause you to, it may bring some things up from underneath that you don't want, that you'll have to deal with later. That's okay. That's, I think having the sprinkler system is a better trade-off, and that's fine. You have to just work when the contractor can, and getting it in the spring is when you do it. So getting the sprinkler system is the number one most important thing here. Let's go ahead and prevent crabgrass after that. So what I would say, because that app is going to be delayed 3-4 weeks, you're going to be at the end of the window for the first app, and then your second one would come pretty soon after. So what I would say is avoid the split app, Michelle, and just do a full app sometime right after they install the sprinkler system. So the irrigation's getting installed, let's say, the third week of April. So then the fourth week of April, that's when you put down your per diem, and you don't do the split app. You do the full app of 6 pounds per 1,000 square feet. So you're just combining the two split apps together into one big, heavy blanket app. I don't like those kind of terms, but that's what it is. It's one heavy app instead of two split apps. 6 pounds per 1,000. That's what you're going to do. Now, the one thing you want to be concerned with, though, is looking farther into the fall. Are you possibly going to want to do grass seed in the fall, aeration and seed? I don't know if you will, but if you do, you may want to look, because if you apply that, let's just call it May 1st, just to make my math easy. I want you to look at a general rule, all of y'all, when you're using prodiamine, that typically our prodiamine here, the granular that we sell, or most of them that are similar, typically 1 pound per 1,000 is going to give you 1 month of control. Now, you don't apply that low, but just think 1 pound, 1 month. Just think of it that way. So 3 pounds per 1,000, 3 months. We do the split app. We get 6 months out of that, but we split it up. Michelle, if you do 6 pounds per 1,000 now, like we're talking about, after the sprinklers are installed on May 1st, you're going to have 6 months of control after that. So let's just do a little math there. May to June to July, August, September, October, November. 6 months puts you into November. if you're going to want to do seeding, you may not want to do that full app because that'll put you a little late. You're probably in Nebraska going to be able to open up and start seeding, I would say, sometime there in the beginning of September. So you may want to back off that app there of that prodiamine in May and put down a 4 pounds. It'll give you May, June, July, and August. Maybe even a 5 pounds per thousand to give you May, June, July, August, September. Maybe you want to do it that way and then just aerate super heavy. But either way, lighten up that pre-emergent knowing that you're going to push yourself into the fall. Now, if you don't plan on seeding at all, Michelle, then no worries. Go ahead with the full 6 pounds per thousand, throw down the prodiamine, water it in, hope for the best, and have a great season. So I think I'm going to end it there. Great questions this week. Got into some cool topics. I try to go a little bit off of some of the normal things that I talk to you guys about, try to give you some options for some more advanced or other ideas or strategies that you can undertake this year. But the whole idea with all of this is that you're getting out, you're having fun, you're learning, you're dominating your neighborhood, you're mowing a lot, you're getting the extras, all of the great things that come along with playing that long ball game and having a beautiful lawn. With that, I'm Alan Hain, the Lawn Care Nut. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the lawn.